coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 63. Chris Jordan, your host here, coming at you live from Austin, Texas. I'm very happy to welcome back our first guest this evening, Sev Talk. She's the author of You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. We will be talking to her about not only the abduction experience, but the trauma that comes along with that and the reason why MUFON has started things like the Experiencer Resource Team to help experiencers. And how is it that the number of experiences have grown? We'll be talking with Sev Talk about that here in a minute. Then after the commercial break, we will be talking with our good friend, Dr. John Hall, of course, about not only targeting technologies, but technologies that have specifically targeted America over the last couple weeks. We will be talking about some of the intel behind the recent balloons being shot down, the objects being shot down over, well, we now know over Alaska, over Canada, over one of the Great Lakes, Lake Huron. So it's been interesting, but are they really what people are making them out to be? That's the question. Or is it really more, you know, maybe some kind of psyop by the enemy to literally destabilize us? Because like we say in the show all the time, it doesn't take a great majority of the population to destabilize something. It doesn't take like, oh, we need like 40% of people to make a mass movement happen. No, like you need less than 10%. So even if they sent stuff over to panic less than 10% of people, would that be enough to literally destabilize our society? Could there be possibilities of an EMP attack? Were they poking and prodding for that? We'll be getting into some of that with Dr. John Hall after our commercial break. Of course, before we bring up Sev Talk, let's head on over to the Facebook group real quick. Facebook is where we have our conversations. Come on by, join the Curious Realm group. That's where we post all kinds of articles about science, the strange, paranormal, and we have conversations. Out of SciTech Daily, a reconfigurable antenna merges mechanical engineering and electromechanics for next generation technology. As an audio engineer and somebody who's into radio, this was a really cool article. Super nerdy. This was a conversation going on in my Talking Sound group. Top DJ deepfakes Eminem into a song, and it seems that it's totally legal. We need to try and get Gordon Firemark, the podcast lawyer, on about that to talk about what the future of this deep fake technology is and how rights can be protected. Of course, out of AP News, rumors swirl about balloons, UFOs, as officials stay mum. And out of Nat Geo, a new docuseries featuring largest Mayan ruins ever discovered. That is just some of the news that is fit to print out there, folks. Make sure to stop on by Facebook and join the Curious Realm group to join the conversation. While you're there, of course, stop on by our website as well as the website of our amazing guest, Sev Talk. She is the author of You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. She is the, well, one of the leads of the MUFON Experiencer Resource Team. Welcome back to the show, Sev. How are you?
Hi, Chris. I'm so happy to be with you again and with your listeners. Thank you for inviting me back.
I always love having you on, Sev. Your energy is fantastic. And as I've said numerous times, I cannot think of a better advocate for experiencers out there. Your story is so absolutely incredible. And to have seen you really come to a point of comfort. You had come to a lot to begin with, when you wrote your book, You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens, you'd really come on a very big personal journey of acceptance, I think. Mm-hmm. But to see where you are now, and especially the work that you're doing with new and recent experiencers, is really beautiful. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much. Well, it's my life passion now to help experiencers. I learned that at my first conference. I wrote my book. It came out in August 2018. And then a couple of weeks later, just as Hurricane Florence was descending on my home, I get an email from AlienCon in Baltimore saying, congratulations, you're a speaker. And that was my moment to come out. That was the first time I ever came out in Baltimore in 2018. And it was there that I learned that I want to help experiencers, because so many people came up to me and wanted to tell me their stories. Until then, I did not realize how many people have seen a UFO or have had ET contact, because I was living in my own little bubble of denial. So I wasn't watching movies. I wasn't listening to podcasts or radio shows. I tried to stay away from the UFO ET topic as much as possible, because it wigged me out. So we were just talking about this a few minutes ago. When I wrote my book and entered this world, I really came in not even knowing who the major players were. I really didn't know anything about anybody. I was very green. And I'm really honored that I've gotten to know a lot of the experiencers, a lot of the well-knowns, but mostly the ones that aren't well-known. Thousands of experiencers I've been honored enough to communicate with and try to help them as much as possible, because it is, it shakes your reality, man, and it's really hard to grapple.
Well, I can only imagine that fact, Sev. I myself, as the audience knows, as you know, have had my own personal spiritual experiences, but to have an experience like you had, especially, coming out of the experiences you'd had in relationships, things like that. You are so honest in your book about that, and the fact of you viewed your experiences through the eyes of trauma for a long time.
Yes, I did. Good way to put it. I usually say through the lens of victimization, but it was trauma. Because but this was all my choosing. I chose to live as a victim. And that's why I have two marriages that became abusive, because I was the perfect victim. So I thought, well, if my husbands are victimizing me, then the Grays are victimizing me too. I mean, that's just the way it works. Now I realize I don't play the victim anymore. I've dropped that vibe. It took a lot of personal introspection, but I dropped it. And now I see that the Grays were not hurting me at all. They were helping me.
Wow. And once again, to see that change in yourself, what was it that ultimately brought that change of mind about for you?
Well, it was the two red X's that were burned into my tush. So I've been an experiencer. I have conscious memories from the age 10. And then I moved here to the Inner Banks of North Carolina in 2017. So here I am in later in life, like in my 50s. And all of a sudden, I have an experience 9 days apart, where I come face to face with Grays and they burn two red X marks in my tush. And that is what made me realize, okay, I have got to face this. Like, that was what did it. It's, I joke. I say that because the Grays have been talking to me for a long time and I just keep ignoring them. I was ignoring them because I was afraid of them. And I joke that they were like, what do we have to do to this woman to get her attention? And one said to the other one, let's just burn a red X into her ass.
And even that, the fact that you joke about it,
yeah.
Now, granted, you say that they'd been talking to you for a long time. Let's explore that for a minute, because, like you said, they had been in contact before abduction and physical contact, correct?
Before the Red X's, I've been communicating with them for about 5 or 6 years before the two Red X's were burned in my back. And I had neutral experiences with them. I never had bad experiences with them. I always thought they were bad because I was afraid. That's why I thought they were bad. As many experiencers do, just because you're afraid of something then and you don't understand something, you tend to think that it might be bad. They've given me so many messages about personal messages about me, but also about us generally, potential destiny, the hybridization program. They've been really actually very, how should I say, educational.
Well, and you know, once again, to know that you were being contacted prior to your abduction, prior to the burn marks coming about on you. Mm-hmm. And like you said, basically had ignored that fact, not really paid attention to it. What was it, do you think, that kept that obscured for you?
Why did I hide it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's multifaceted. First, I hid it because I just couldn't believe it was happening. I was afraid to tell anybody. And because I was really afraid of what people would think of me. And then as I started my practice, and I have clients all around the world, then I thought, well, there's no way my clients could know I'm talking to aliens, because I will lose all my clients. Like, this just cannot happen. Mm. No one can know that I'm talking to ETs. So I finally came out, and all the things I was afraid of have not happened.
Well, that's a plus.
Yeah, coming out. Best thing I've ever done.
Well, and you know, once again, to see your transformation into what you are now, from even where you were whenever I first interviewed you, as we were talking about prior to the show on my previous incarnation, Dudes and Beer. it was sortly. I know the name is. What's my favorite thing is that I still garner hundreds of listens a month on a show that puts out zero new content. It's like, okay. Took a long time to get out there, but man, yeah. I mean, it's funny that, and I think a lot of it is because people listen to this show and then find out that there was 3-4 years of this content before it became this show. And guests like you, things like that, where there are more interviews, people like Dr. John Hall.
I'm sorry to cut you off. What made you
change it? Honestly, it was a couple of situations. As you know, and as my audience knows, I spent my time in broadcast. It was a fantastic idea, a great name. Whenever the show first started, it was literally myself and a couple people sitting around with different ideas, different points of view, and we're going to come back next week, and we're going to be friends, and we're going to disagree. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have beers over it, you know, like they did before America was founded. Like, America was founded in a bar by a bunch of dudes that disagreed on a lot of things, but they agreed they didn't want that. Yes. So what do we do about it?
Okay. But then, all right. And then
we started having conversations with people like you and John Hall and stuff like that. And the conversation moved much deeper. And as I started moving up guest rungs and things like that, you know, contacting good folk like Caroline Corey.
Yeah.
Love her work for easily the last 20 years of my life. But I know what it is to be handled out of an interview.
Oh.
Because I've handled people out of interviews when they were contacting my host on broadcast. And we're like, we'd love to come on and talk about this. When I was handled out of that and a couple of other interviews, it was like, okay, you know, I should really examine this and take a long, cold, hard look, it was the fact of even the name, like I'm pigeonholing the fact of, are women allowed to listen? You know,
You know, all women dudes. If someone calls me a dude, I tell them right away, I am not a dude.
It's just, Well, and that's just it, you know. So, yeah, it's been the best change that ever happened or could happen to us. We've gone out and sponsored events. We were sponsoring MUFON with you this last year. I don't think we would have been allowed to do that as dudes and beer.
You know,
even knowing you.
Like, that's any clout.
Look, when you have the MC on your show, it's a little bit of clout.
You're kind. You're so kind.
If you think I didn't drop your name when I went in there, you're wrong.
You dropped my name. You're funny.
But yeah, it was sincerely the fact of it was time for an overhaul and time to really consider the fact of the numbers and what things were and where I wanted to go with the show. And I wanted to be able to go deeper and further with things. And the only way to do that was to expand and grow and become something different.
Yeah. And become curious.
Well, and, you know, much like you, taking a step outside of comfort zone.
Yeah.
Not that I'm not comfortable talking on a mic, but when you've built something for 5 years, there becomes a comfortability with it. And even stepping forth and renaming things and changing things and rebranding and coming up with new intro and everything else, like it's an effort. And it's not always successful.
It is, yeah. It's fun, though.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of fun. We were talking about this earlier, how you and I, our thing is to create. As long as we create, we're fine.
Yeah.
And we each find a different ways to create. But that's what you and I are all about, creating.
Well, and I think that's also a big part of you with the Experiencer resource team is the fact that you have been there since the inception of it and gotten to help create a lot of this protocol with how to deal with people.
At the beginning, Kathy Martin started it.
I know that.
I've been on the ERT for I think maybe a year on the executive committee. I became a field investigator in 2020. And at first I didn't want to become a field investigator.
Why not?
My mentors within MUFON has suggested I become a field investigator. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll think about it. Because I thought I had to go to people's homes. And as a woman, that's not something that is appealing. I don't want to go to someone's house.
Sure.
A person's house. And then when they said, oh, no, we don't really do that anymore unless there's an actual landing and you got to go take specimens and things. It's just everything is done online, Zoom and all that, telephone. And then I thought, oh, well, if that's the case, okay, then I'll do it. So to become a field investigator, you have to study, you read, there's a handbook, there's lots of videos you have to watch. It's quite a bit of material. And then you have to take a test and you have to score, I think it's 80% or more, and then you become a field investigator. And then from that, I was asked to join the executive resource team. And then I was asked to be on the executive committee. Now, the experiencer resource team, there's about 50 of us around the world. That's it. And we deal with people who have had direct contact with a non-human being or an ET.
And that is a lot of the reason that I love having you on the show is because not only are you dealing with people that have that direct ET contact, but you are helping them hand in hand work through their trauma of their experience. And I say that word because of most people that I've interviewed, most of the books I have on my shelf of anybody that's had the experience that you've had, Terry Lovelace has had, Betty and Barney Hill, even Kathleen Martin, her Aunt Betty was like, honey, this ever happens to you, you tell nobody.
Yeah.
Like, this will destroy your life.
Yeah, that's part of the trauma, is not being able to share it. And if you do, often you have family members that just say, okay, you know, you really shouldn't be talking about this in public. And then you're so isolated. And at the same time, your reality is completely different from everyone else's all of a sudden. Completely different. And you feel like you're living one foot in the other dimensions and one foot in 3D, and you're just trying to find your balance. Sometimes you're talking to ETs and sometimes you're talking to humans. And no one else you know is doing this. But this is your reality, but it's no one else's reality until you start to come out. Once you start to come out to yourself, I'm not saying you have to write a book or be on TV or anything.
Yeah.
Once you start coming out to yourself, getting some help, because all experiencers need help. Once you get that help, then you realize, oh, I am not alone at all. There are actually millions of experiencers on this planet, but many of them don't even know it because it happens in this multidimensional, interdimensional way that feels hazy and dreamlike. But a dream does not put two red X's on your tush.
Yeah.
So that's what those two red X's really taught me. Oh, when you have that hazy, weird experience, but you know it's real, but there are no words to describe it, that is real. And that's one thing that I try to express to people. When you have these experiences that feel like a dream, but you know they're not a dream, that you can't forget, that you can you remember every detail for decades. And also every time you rethink that experience, all this emotion is evoked. That is not a dream.
Yeah. Yeah. That is as is used in the term an experience. It is something that viscerally changes you from the inside out. Whether you have chosen to remember and recall all of that, might depend on literally how much it either frightened or amazed or even befuddled and confused you and challenged your paradigm of belief. You know, like a prime example is Wallace W. Wagner. We had him on a few weeks ago. He was a fully religious man, fully involved in his church. And all of a few years ago had a major experience and it changed his life. He is now a full on believer. Before that, he would have called people, you know, courting demons. So biblical his life was.
So how did that transform his religious perspective?
His religious perspective became a lot less staunch. He still has his full on belief in Christ and salvation and everything else, but he is much more accepting of his fellow man and their beliefs.
Isn't that judgmental then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the way to put it would be his hellfire and damnation tamped down a little bit.
That's good. I'm glad to hear.
Well, it's an amazing and beautiful thing to hear. And it rings a lot to me, especially the conversations that we've had with Kathleen here on the show, where she talks about people being changed in a spiritual way and how more people seem to be coming back from their experiences, that more of these experiences seem to be, like you're saying, almost in a multidimensional state than in a physical reality.
Mm-hmm. Although it does happen in 3D too. I've had 3D experiences as well with ETs.
Oh, sure. I mean, you gotta have 3D in order to get branded on your, your backside.
Yeah, that was a combination of, but the memory of that doesn't feel 3D. Like when I was wide awake in the middle of my living room one afternoon, two light beings came in. That to me is what I mean by 3D.
Gotcha.
Although those beings weren't 3D, they were clearly interdimensional, but I was wide awake in my living room. I just wanted to say, in dealing with experiences, we have different types of experiences. Some of us have how we perceive them to be a little differently. Some of us perceive our experiences to be scarier than others. And also, it depends on what's happening in your experience. For instance, the hybridization program. which is men and women are part of this hybridization program. I'm talking about the one between the grays and the humans, and it exists. And I've been given information about that and been shown hybridized babies. This is very hard, especially for the women. It tends to be more women that come up with these memories. Very hard for women to deal with this because many of them view it as being raped. Sure. They view it as something being done against their will. I firmly believe that we have a higher self that really calls the shots. And there is a reason for every experience that we have, the reason to help us transform, help us to understand something. And so that is why I rarely use the word abduction, because abduction implies victimization. And I do not believe
I was going to say specifically it implies use of force.
Oh.
That you're being forced,
yes,
like against your will to go somewhere.
Yes. And our lower selves might feel like that. But sure. If we look at it from the higher perspective, we can see there's so much to learn from this and to grow from this. If we could just get to that place. But first, we have to combat the fear, which is so normal and really prevalent when you first start having ET contact.
Well, and the fear especially. Like you said, whenever you first start having ET contact, amongst the people that you have talked with, what percentage of people have become comfortable with their ET contact?
I never really figured out the percentage, but now that I'm thinking about
just gut figures out of two handfuls of people.
Maybe less than a quarter.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. Less than a quarter. No, most of them are still struggling. But what happens is once you talk to somebody like me or to anybody, it doesn't even have to be me, or to MUFON, whoever you talk to, that is really the beginning of your healing. And that's why it's really important to talk to somebody. But first, admit it about yourself, because if you don't admit it about yourself, you're not being authentic and you're hiding something about you that's really important. We shouldn't be embarrassed to say that we have come in contact with a non-human entity. That's extraordinary. It's fantastic. It's superb. And we shouldn't be embarrassed about it anymore.
Well, and, especially with all the research that is out there, even right now with quantum physics and the concept of non-local reality it's really phenomenal to think about, because the case that Kathleen speaks about, where the person passed through the skin of the UFO when their vibration changed. I literally heard Hal Putoff talk about the same case at the International Remote Viewing Association, and coming at it from a point of view of physics, not coming at it from a point of view of, spiritual frequency or frequency of mind and that kind of vibration. But speaking of it as the reason why somebody can see it and the person right next to them can't, is because of the frequency at which they're vibrating.
That's right. That's right. And also, where are they in terms of knowing the desire to know the truth? So one thing that really happened to me, once I got these two X's put on my tush, I had recently started this path of authenticity. I decided, all right, I'm going to be the most authentic version of myself I can possibly be, however I can get there, I'm going to do. And then that's when I had to face my ET reality. And then when I did, and I moved through it, I'm still processing it. I think you just process it forever, because it's still it's still hard to believe.
I can imagine that it's no different than losing a loved one. I can imagine that it's no different than my experience that I had in the seminary. you know, that, yeah, I will process that experience spiritually and psychologically for the remainder of my life.
Yeah.
For the rest of it. It changed me. It changed who I am. It changed the way I think about the world around me.
Yeah. Yes, that's what happens. And even though we know it happened, without a doubt, I know what happened to me, but here's the weird thing. Even though I know what happened, it kind of feels like, did it really happen? So in terms of a lie detector, would I pass a lie detector? I don't know, because it's not like I can talk about it with 100% conviction. I don't know. It's really hard to describe. I know what happened. I'm 100% convinced on I know what happened, but a part of me is still like, really? So I guess I'm not 100%. I'm 99%. It's weird. And all experiencers are like this. There's still a part of us. It's like, God, can really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even talking with Terry Lovelace, the few times that we've had him on the show, and even personally, there is a part of him that still, like you said, wonders whether or not what happened was the reality.
But he knows it was.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing. Like, it doesn't make sense what I'm saying, but that's the way it is.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm sure it's strange to begin with. I mean, most people do not have a sharp, vivid memory beyond 5 to 7 years, Sev. Even when it comes to experience, that experience becomes psychologically muddled with other things that happen in life, you know? And even with situations like that, but prime example, when my wife and I first got together, Facebook was still pretty well infancy. Like, it was pretty close to still, like, you had to know somebody by going to school with them in order to have friendship. And I saw a person that I'd known for years from high school. We ran in different crowds, whatnot. I invited her to be a friend, and she sent me a personal message back, like, I can't believe that you sent me this invite. And I was like, okay. And I remember a lot of things very vividly from my childhood, but I do not remember a lot of the things that she said that happened. And I remember my cousin having to move away, all kinds of things. But I don't remember that. Hmm. And it was something that I dealt with for a long, long time. 'Cause it was like, did I block this out?
Was
this something that, I mean, even the knowledge of it, knowing this person and knowing that person and being stuck in the middle as a kid, did I block that out?
Yeah. Yeah, who knows what we block out.
You know? The fact of being able to, and that's just my personal example of, here's an experience that obviously happened and should have been something that rocked me. The way I knew my cousin and the way I knew this person from my class. You know? But at the same token, I remembered nothing about it.
That's interesting.
I remembered nothing about it.
Wow.
So, and I've got a pretty good and vivid memory.
Yeah, there's
really
a
really good and vivid memory, but that is one that breezed right past me.
Even today, did parts of it come back to you?
No.
Oh my God.
No. And I don't know. I have no idea what hidden traumas in my life are locked to or linked to that. No idea.
Yes. Yeah. Do you want to find out? Do you want to go there?
I'd love to go there. I was actively regressed on air by our friend Terry Lovelace.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, yeah. He did a regression session with me, and I recorded it and aired it.
Oh, you are brave. What came out?
Apparently somewhere in there, I guess it was like a French farmhand here in America. I didn't speak English. I only spoke French. Really interesting. Yeah. It was pretty wild. But
what's the year?
I don't know what the year was. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was an interesting experience and a great episode to air. I'm into doing a lot of things like that. Where it's like, let's see what it's about.
Wow.
And I'm unabashed about it. I don't really care. I don't edit my show. Closest thing that I come to editing my show was 2 weeks ago with Mike Turber, before it was released, that there were electronic materials on the balloon that got shot down. While I was pre-recording with Mike Turber, a colonel called him to be on a conference call, with the NSA and other security people about the balloon, and mentioned that there were electronic material countermeasures and signals coming from the balloon. And I had to bleep that. Two days later, the story came out in the news that there were electronic devices on there able to listen to conversations and all kinds of stuff. But it's like, wow, I had to bleep that. Couldn't say that live on air because it wasn't public knowledge yet.
Yeah, something very interesting is happening right now. Why all of a sudden they're using the term UFO when they insisted on using UAP? What's that about? So
yeah,
it's like shoot down UFOs, shoot down UFOs, shoot down. So we've never seen that in headlines like that. Well, not never, but we just don't see that in headlines. Yeah. They don't talk like that. Now it's daily. What is going on?
Because I explained that to my brother because he sent me the headline of, fighter jet shoots down UFO. And I was like, you can tell that it's nothing major because they didn't say UAP. They would have used the modern nomenclature if it was something of that type. But the fact that they're saying UFO to begin with will tell you that.
Kind of narrative going on.
It's strange.
To prepare the people to get used to hearing shot down UFO. Shot down UFOs.
Well, and it's interesting, Seb, because we talked with Mike Turber about it. We broke down about 2 weeks ago before the balloon, the new UFO UAP report from Congress. And whenever the first hearings happened, a lot of the questions that came forward were formulated by MUFON. A lot of the questions that were asked during that first congressional hearing, from my understanding, came from MUFON. And it was really interesting to see their responses.
Talking about the live congressional hearing in May, I think it was May of last year.
Yeah. What led to the first annual UFO UAP report, the 12 pages of nothing.
Yes. Pages of nothing, but at least they're keeping it in the forefront of our consciousness by talking about it, and that I'm grateful for.
Well, and what I'm grateful for, especially, a lot of people, and I'm sure you're in a lot of communities that I'm in, a lot of people don't like MUFON. I like MUFON because they really care about the scientific research of it, and they were the first ones to really put forth protocol for scientific research of it and saying, here's what we have to do in order to, because even whenever I went to MUFON in Denver, one of the first things I heard from somebody was like, well, this is no alien con. And it was like, no, this is an actual, like, you're going to, the people that are here today are taking an 8-hour class on being a field researcher. They aren't waiting in line for the costume contest.
Right. It's really serious. And
not that Alien Con isn't fun. Like, I go to comic conventions all the time and speak and all kinds of things.
There's for all of it. But MUFON is the largest UFO research organization in the world. And we're really the ones that have created a way for people to contact us and enter their information into a database. Our database is extraordinary.
Yes.
And we're transforming. Every organization has its ups and downs. And just like humans transform, MUFON is transforming. And we just have to give it time to go through its growing pains, as human beings have growing pains.
Well, and as with a lot of communities right now, there is a slight changeover of the guard, you know. It's being passed on to new generations. New people are coming up through the ranks, things like that, because it's time for that to happen 30, 40 years into research.
Yeah, there's no reason to live in the past.
Yeah.
And keep, because if you're in a relationship with somebody and you keep living in the past, that relationship is doomed. Remember that. You can't bring up everything that person did for the past. You know, I was married to somebody, and every time he got married to me, he's like, let me start the list. And he would start list of all the things that he claimed I did wrong.
All right.
There you go. To do it when I was in the car and I couldn't get out.
That's a proper footing.
That was the first marriage that ended. Yeah, that was very abusive.
Well, and, you know, it's hard not to want everything to be what we want it to be, Sev. You know, I'm just of the mind of, if this was anything other than surveillance technology or something of the like, we would be hearing nothing about it.
Yeah.
We would be hearing nothing about it. Now, granted,
it's really alien technology.
I don't think so.
We're not going to shoot down alien technology.
No.
I mean, come on. Like, are we arrogant enough to think that, you know,
that is what I have seen in a lot of the discussion forums? Is like, you know, not saying that our dudes ain't good, but you really think that's what's going to happen?
Yeah, exactly.
You really think that's
why it's not about that. It's about the terminology.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Saying it. UFO shot down. UFO shot down. I'm telling you, they're creating some kind of narrative to prepare ourselves to maybe brainwash ourselves.
Yeah.
Twist the way that we see UFOs as being evil or negative or bad and worthy of being shot down. This is what I really see happening. It's not about what they actually shot down. It's how the terminology that they're using.
Hold on. I have right here an applause. Because absolutely, that is exactly what we have been saying since, and not that all these things haven't led to fantastic stuff. Not that it has not led to more open discussions, people in Congress being aware that there are programs out there. With the money that they've put out without ever realizing it. And that's where it really came down to. It was like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm right on to this topic. And why didn't I know about these people researching it? And why did the money come from my committee? We need to get into this. And granted, that's led to an annual now report, no different than the NDAA, where they're going to bury things inside of it all day long. You know, and the conversation during that whole first hearing and the conversation ever since has been air defense.
Yes, they talked a lot about protecting sources and methods and this and that and this and that. On my YouTube channel, Alien Spirit, I have a video where I go through that entire congressional.
Yeah.
And give my opinions and talk about it and discuss it. Overall, there were parts of it that were crazy, but overall, I was really happy.
Same. Right. Absolutely. And granted, I loved every part. There were probably about four or five parts where they'd ask a hard question and be like, we'll talk about that in the closed door session after this.
Right. And then we're talking about submersibles.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and lo and behold, since then, all kinds of things have come out about submarines being buzzed by objects, all kinds of stuff. But once again, all of the talk forever and always is about that budget and about that defense budget. And what do we do What do we do about these objects? And even if these are balloons, what have you, it carries on once again, like you said, that mentality of fear. And what do we do about these objects? Well, we fund more weapons. Is what we do.
That's the answer to everything in America.
We fund more weapons. We increase the defense budget specifically for this because wait a minute. We don't have a defense budget for this.
Space Force. What's a Space Force?
Yeah. And that's one that even we talked about regularly on this show when it was coming about. Like they've been talking Space Force for years and years. That was nothing new.
Yeah.
So yeah, like it really a foregone conclusion, and all of it seems, I don't know. I almost buy into the idea of Project Bluebeam, where they are basically trying to set up for the mass panic of a slice of population through the means of alien invasion.
I do believe that. That's what it looks like from my perspective. That's what I think is happening. Because
frighteningly.
Because the masses are starting to believe more and more and more and more. And that's not going to benefit the government.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's like we said with Reverend Michael Carter, that they're only going to disclose what it behooves them to disclose.
That's right.
Period. Whether it's financially or even the fact of like, hey, we can only keep this technology on the shelf for so long. At some point, we've got to turn a nickel with it.
Yes, that's right.
And the only way we're going to be able to turn a nickel with it is to say it exists.
Yes. Right. We'll see, because the truth always comes out. So if you want to like strong arm us into thinking that it's not real, it's just it's not going to work. It's very temporary.
Well, and even this conversation that we're having right here, Sev, really does take that willingness to step outside the box and step outside the box of the fear mentality. And the idea of these things that are coming in are something that we should be afraid of to begin with.
Right. That's right.
You know, and once you're beyond that, you have a whole world and panoply of options that are out there that are not fear-based and are pretty logical.
Yes. Right. That is a really good way of putting it. But until you're there, what you just said doesn't make sense.
Yeah. No, until then, it's just a world of conspiratorial fear everywhere around you.
That's
nothing like cortisol junkies.
Oh, yeah.
But in all sincerity, Sev, I want to thank you for coming on the show, for talking about this in such an unabashed manner. You're always so willing to share not only your experience, but what others can do to reach out, what others can do to find some peace in their own life with dealing with these things. And I thank you for that.
Thank you. That's a really nice thing to say. And when you talk to me like that and say such supportive things, it really fuels me to continue.
Well, good, because you should continue. You're amazing at what you do. And like I said, I cannot think of a better advocate for people that are trying to turn their experience into something other than what it was. You know, and trying to really dig into what it means for them to have been a contactee, because it's far less than a one in a million experience.
Oh yeah, it's happening to lots of people.
So you're far from alone, folks. If you are out there, if you have experienced this, Sev, tell them where they can go to get in touch with you. Tell them where they can go for you do like spiritual coaching, things like that as well. Tell everybody where they can go to get in contact with you and all that kind of good stuff.
Well, I have a website, planetsev.com. And one of the reasons I named it that is because I actually have a planet and a star system named after me in the Star Wars galactic system. And a few weeks ago, I got a lot of emails from people because they heard the Sev Talk planet mentioned in the
Andor.
Yeah. I was waiting for that moment to happen. So who owns my name, me or Disney? I don't know.
Oh, that's a whole nother can of worms.
Am I allowed to use my name? Yes, right. And my YouTube channel, Alien Spirit. I also have a newsletter. You can sign up on my website. If you want to contact me, if you need help with the processing and experience that you had, you can go to ET Encounters and fill out a few questions and I'll get in touch with you. I'll help you as much as I can. That's free. Yeah, tell me your ET story. And I just have a few short questions for you down towards the very bottom and I'll contact you. And I'm speaking at UFOCon in San Francisco next month. And then I'll be at the McMiniman's UFO Festival in Oregon in May. I've been invited back to MUFON Symposium in August to give a special talk. It's a two-hour talk about the messages that experiencers get. Wow. And how they use these messages to help transform themselves and then ultimately transform the collective.
Absolutely. Once again, that's incredible. I can't wait to hear that talk. It was great seeing you share in BMC this last year. It will be great seeing you step into that. And because that's a long talk.
Yeah, a couple hours. I'm going to have special guests. I'm going to have Earl Grey Anderson, who was an Aliens MUFON was on Ancient Aliens on Friday. Yeah, that was wonderful.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Who's the director of the ERT. They're going to be my special guests.
Nice.
So well, anyone who's interested in learning more about the experiencer experience, or if you are an experiencer, this talk, you can come and you can share and we can talk and you can learn a lot more.
Absolutely. Sev, thank you once again, as always, for coming on. I love chatting with you. I love sharing these things.
Thank you.
You're welcome on anytime. Take care of yourself.
You too. Bye, everybody.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, Sev.
Bye.
Bye-bye. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work by Sev Talk over at planetsev.com, folks, make sure to stop on by. You can buy her book at the Curious Realm store, our newly constructed store here with all of our guest books, everything else. Scroll on about halfway down and you will see the amazing book here by Sev Talk. You have the right to talk to aliens. Just click on it. It'll take you right to the Amazon page where you can buy it and support Sev. That's also a great way to support the show, folks, is buying guest books through our store gives us pennies in the bank. So stop on by, support, check out the website. When we get back from this commercial break, we will be welcoming our good friend, Dr. John Hall, to discuss some of the many possibilities of these balloons, the possible psyop that might be going on with everything with the balloons here in America. We'll be talking about that right after this, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get two 25 milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is Curious7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today. And let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training. And use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is podcastcadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store. Well, hello everybody and welcome back from commercial break. Thank you so much to SevTalk and especially to MUFON and all the research they do out there. I know that there's a large disgruntled population amongst the community out there, but I think a lot of that unfortunately comes from the fact that MUFON is out there trying to do as much science as possible and doesn't just take every video offhand in consideration if there's, you know, raging issues with it. Right now it is currently Super Bowl Sunday, and I figured before we get into I want to be a part of the mass exposure, the mass brainwash when it happens. And I guess that's a big part of why I turn into the Super Bowl. You know, it really is one of the largest broadcasts of the year. And there's so much in there. There's so much that happens. A, the commercials are typically hilarious. B, as a production person, I love watching the halftime show. I have personal friends that are out on the field running tech at the halftime shows, stuff like that for Super Bowl. But in addition to that, you know, there's always that chance that on the global stage, something will be revealed. And right now, coming up against that, we are actively in the midst of a reveal, whether or not it is full happenstance, whether or not it is the idea of full veil over things, but everything going on with balloons, all that kind of stuff. I wanted to have Dr. John Hall on, because there's been a lot of leap in technology, and there's been a lot, especially when it comes to disinformation about this stuff, and whenever it comes to technologies that are even available out there, and what could be floated on the balloon, and what kind of nefarious, horrible things could happen. So welcome back to the show, Dr. John Hall. How are you doing?
Chris, it's great to be back on with you. How are you?
Doing all right, man. How's that beautiful baby of yours?
Well, she's doing great, and got her first set of little plastic golf clubs. I'm hoping to get her turned on to golf so she can get a golf scholarship when she's 18.
Yeah, right. It's something.
Yeah.
That's right. It's every time we play the game of life at my house, I'm like, career.
Yeah.
I'll choose career. Give me a job right now. Forget the college.
Well, and you know, the cool thing is, you know, well, you know, and you know, I've been a musician all my life as well. And yeah, played in various bands and done some professional recording. And so I definitely want her to grow up musically inclined. And it's funny, she's not even two yet. And I got her own little nylon string pink guitar. When I have her, we do music videos together. And now she's to the, when I grab my guitar, she grabs her guitar and bangs along beside me and everything. So I think it's good that she's actually picking up on that, you know, desire to be musically inclined. I hope it continues as she grows up. So
yeah, me and my boy have been here lately doing a little show on Thursday nights. He got a record player for Christmas and has been loving 45 records. And he was like, I want to do a show. And I was like, well, don't tell that to Dad. So yeah, now we're doing a live broadcast every Thursday night, just like playing classic 45s and things like that on Mixcloud. It's super fun. Just kind of talking about music, and he dances around and we play 45 records. It's great. He loves it.
Dude, so. I remember as a kid, my first 45 that I got. Now, you know, of course I'm aging myself now, but remember they had the battery powered 45 players you could carry around, look like a little suitcase. And I had one of those. And for Christmas, one of the first 45s I got, Three Dog Night, Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog.
Nice. Nice. Heck yeah. We have been enjoying all kinds of fun stuff. I guess the big one that he loved not too long ago was Spooky. We got Spooky, and he really enjoyed that one like a lot. So it's been interesting going back and forth with you over the last few days with all this spy balloon stuff, everything else. We had Mike Turber on when the first balloon was shot down. And since then, like I told him, and then we had him on the first week to talk about the UFO UAP report, which is now an annual report. Then that weekend, the first balloon incident happened over Montana, and we had him on breaking the news that there was electronic equipment aboard and surveillance and counter surveillance equipment aboard it. Since then, there have been a couple of other balloons. Alaska was talked about whenever we did the show, wasn't confirmed, but now we're into Canada, all kinds of things. We're into smaller balloons that don't necessarily look like balloons. But it's been interesting, and I think it's really raised the conversation of portable technology and like, oh, you know, what are they going to do with a balloon? You could do a lot with a balloon. You could do a lot. So let's start getting into some of those possibilities, especially whenever it comes to, mass control and targeting of individuals, things like that. Whenever you're talking about targeting technologies, Havana syndrome type stuff.
Well, you know, it's interesting to see China kind of reverting back to an older technology, because that's one of the things I mentioned in my book, in Guinea Pigs, is, you know, for some of the solutions when, you know, people are, you know, having their homes broken into and, you know, having their, you know, their cars tracked and things like that, trying to establish a security code in your home alarm, but your home still being broken into. One of the recommendations that I made in Guinea Pigs was to revert back to basically older archaic technology to catch the break-ins, because the sad fact is when they can pick up on your brainwaves and hear your thoughts in real time, you're never going to have a security code that they don't know. So, because you have to think about it to be able to input it. And, you know, the people doing this, they're used to breaking into homes. They're used to calling ADT, pretending to be you. You know, as a matter of fact, I mentioned in my first book, you know, I was like, man, I've got a monitor alarm. How are they getting in my house? Well, when I called ADT, all of the numbers had been changed by one number. You know, the numbers that you give ADT to call when the alarm goes off, the fire department was actually changed to a public service recording number. The cell phone number was changed by one. My office number was changed by one. They called pretending to be me and had all my data to do it, to change all of that. I had to have it all changed back. But when they know your code, they can just step in and shut the alarm off. And one of the ways they were breaking into my house was coming through the garage. Typically in most homes, the garage is not part of your alarm system. So the garage door can open and it doesn't set off the alarm. They do that because a lot of people wouldn't have time to open the door, get in the back, and turn the alarm off. So, and then they were lowering my attic access stairs in the garage. The alarm wasn't going off until the motion detector was picking them up when they came through the attic inside the house. Never, at no time was a front door or back door being opened. So, I mean, they, you know, once the alarm started going off, they would either, at first, the police were showing up. And matter of fact, the police even told me, we've been to your house about 16 times with your alarm going off. Maybe it's malfunctioning. I said, there were people in my house every time you came. It's just they weren't breaking and entering. They were opening the garage door, which you can buy universal openers that switch frequencies, search frequencies until they find the one that opens your garage door. That is easy enough to do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or you can use a coat hanger to open a garage door. I mean, it's really easy. And so that's one of the things I put in my book, is to revert back to older tech. If you're worried that somebody's coming into your house, you know, sprinkle, you know, talcum powder or baby powder along in front of the entrances and the exits, you know, where, you know, at least you'll see if somebody tracks through it and tracks through your house. They'll never clean that up. You can also buy sprays that are fluorescent, that are invisible to the naked eye. Yeah. And once it's on their feet or on their hands, everywhere they go with UV light, you can see who's tracked through your home.
Yeah. Almost, you know, little, illuminal.
Yeah. Little things like that, or, you know, or setting, you know, if you think they're breaking in and getting on your computer, you know, set a piece of paper between the keys that's, you know, so minute that, you know, when they manipulate the keyboard, it's going to blow off or move, and you'll see that it's, you know, that it's been manipulated. Now, that being said, you know, a lot of the break-ins that are involved with targeting, they want you, the victim, to know. So, I mean, a lot of time it's, you know, they'll grab all your clothes and stick them on the island in the kitchen, or leave a cigarette burning in your house when you don't smoke, you know, or, you know, intentionally leave the smell of cigarette smoke in there, you know, because they want you to call the police and say, well, somebody was in my house, they went through all my clothing and they left a cigarette burning. And, you know, the police say, well, was anything stolen? You know, well, no.
Well,
with nothing stolen, you have no case. So you get criminal trespassing. That's a report. It's not investigated. And the Chinese have figured that out, apparently, that, you know, with all of our surveillance, you know, technology, that you can still float a balloon here at a certain altitude. And, you know, all of our, you know, radar installations and, you know, satellites are geared for, you know, looking at heat signatures and metallic large objects, not something that's mostly vinyl with, you know, 100 pounds of tech in it.
Well, now, granted, the first balloon that came across, the package attached to it was approximately the size of three city buses. So yeah. It was no small thing. That was one of the things I brought up with Mike Turber, was that's the last thing you want to shoot down if you don't, you don't know what's inside of it. B, unless you can track its exact trajectory on the way down, who knows what it's going to hit, you know? Like, it could land on top of a school. I mean, like I said, it was in the middle of Montana, so likelihood, probably not. Yeah. It's not like it was floating through downtown San Antonio, you know? But even then, whenever you're talking about anything like that, you have no idea. Like, you were just speaking of the ease of which somebody could tap in and get a garage door code. I'm holding in my hand right now a piece of RF scanning technology. I use it in my industry all the time to find competing signals in hotels. Like, oh, what frequency is their radio on? You know, what frequencies are open for me to be able to tune my microphones to so that they don't have competition? All I have to do is turn this on, and if somebody hits their garage door nearby, I will literally see a spike, and it will tell me the numbers of the megahertz, like, right there. It will give me the exact frequency that just popped up around me. Now, the frequency technology to duplicate that and get it out there, a little bit different, but this is commercially available. Like, it's sitting on my desk in front of me. That's how common it is in my life to have one around.
And the other thing with the garage door, a lot of people don't realize that you can, you know, take a long coat hanger, go over the top of the garage, catch that little clip on the release from the lock, pull it back. Once it releases, then it's free to open and close by hand.
Yeah.
So, and even, you know, and that.
Even whenever you're talking, there was the article the other day. Hold on, let me find it, because if you Google Chinese lasers Hawaii, there we go. Here comes the article on screen right now out of KHAN working for Hawaii. Chinese satellite lasers recorded over Hawaii. This was like right up around the same time as this was February 11th. So this was just a couple days ago that they active, and this was recorded by, you can see the image here of the actual lasers coming out of the sky. It was recorded by the observatory, and there were all kind of articles like, what are these strange lights? And it's like, it's lasers from a Chinese satellite. That's the kind of technology that is out there right now. And when you're talking about the CNET article that I had up a minute ago from 2012, Untethered Tech, wireless sensors monitor brainwaves. To think of the fact that they could hover over an area and gather brainwaves, not impossible. Not in the least.
No, and, you know, like in my first book, you know, I made a point to, you know, to illustrate that a lot of this was being done, or, you know, by satellite. Now, with this type of targeting, there's always going to be a plan B and a plan C. You know, they're never going to put all their eggs in one basket where it's all done one way. Now, it, you know, and certainly, you know, now you can track somebody inside by, you know, by seeing what their position is within their own Wi-Fi. So, and, you know, and we're all bathed in Wi-Fi signals now that we're using 5G, because, you know, 5G coats you with, you know, with Wi-Fi signal just about everywhere you go, unless you're truly in rural areas. But, you know, that's one way to actually determine, sure, who's inside of a home and where, is by tracking within their own Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Yeah. And that technology has been coming around for a long time. I remember whenever we first met, was the first time that I heard about people using like mesh networks and that kind of stuff, and Wi-Fi signals from routers to be able to basically do the same thing, like what they showed in Batman, where it's like, oh, let me use all the cell phone signals like a huge bat and get echolocation. And that's pretty much the same thing that's happening with this technology, being able to use the the known pulse quantitative to basically map an area and be able to see objects and even in real time be able to see that. So, to think that anything like that wouldn't have been aboard this balloon, even the first balloon had, quote, E-class materials. We had to beep that last week, folks. Whenever we had Mike Turber on, that hadn't even been released to the media. That came out in the media that there was an electronic materials package on there on Thursday. Feel free to.
Well, and I know, I know they're worried about these things having explosives in them for self, which I was trying to announce in either. I would certainly have a way to destroy it remotely. You know, yeah. if I were behind it too, which is, I know one of the things they're worried about in shooting them down. Now, the other objects that they shot down, I don't think so far the media or they haven't released to the press that they're balloons just yet. You know, they're still referring to them as objects. And, but obviously they're getting here and not being picked up, you know, until they're already here, which, you know, with my mistrust of the government, of course, you know, and we've talked about this, you know, one of my fears is to some extent, are they being allowed, you know, to intrude our space? You know, and because it was a civilian that got a picture of the big one that they shot down after it hovered over Montana, over our, you know, Minuteman missile bases for a while and then made its way, you know, out to the Atlantic where they shot it down. But, you know, unfortunately, right now we have an administration that is has been pretty friendly to China, has made a lot of money off of China. And I just sure. worry if had a civilian not taken a picture of this balloon, would we have ever known it was even here?
I think that we would have never known. I don't think that they would have ever released the fact that it was over us. I don't think I think that they would have downed it the exact same way that they downed it. Waited till it got over the coast. That's the smart thing to do. You have no idea what's inside of it. If there's an explosive package, if there's, you know, like we said with Mike Turber, if there's a biological package, even inside of the air of the balloon. So to let prevailing winds push it off into the water and far off coast to where, yeah, it lands in the water, splashes down there, and any airborne debris just dissolves into the air, not over a populated area. That's the safest bet. But like he said, a lot of the reason why they kept going and why they let it keep going was because they were gathering intelligence from it. They were actively intercepting signals, all kinds of things. So a lot of it was the data that they were able to gather from the device as it sent things back was almost invaluable.
Well, what troubles me is then they made the comment that three of those balloons had flown over during the Trump administration.
Yep.
But Trump, his security advisor, and his head of the Department of Defense all said that they never were told that if it happened. So, you know, if the people that are in the civilian side of government aren't being told by the Pentagon when something like that happens, then I kind of got a problem with that, too.
Well, and it's a prime example of what we've said numerous times on this show, John, the fact of the people think the president is briefed on everything on a daily. He's not. He's not. He's not. I'd love to say he is. He is, as far as chain of command goes, the buck does not stop there, unfortunately. He is only commander in chief, quote, in time of military exercise. You know, in time of actual war. So there he is a not on a need to know basis for everything that comes across the plate. He is full on a temporary employee. He doesn't need to know 10, 15 year overarching military plans. That would be beyond the scope of any president's terms.
Well, I think the security advisor should probably know when
one would think
a foreign craft is in our airspace.
Yeah.
You know, and that which leads me back to what we've also talked about before is, you know, has the intelligence community reached a point where there's so little oversight that they actually are running the country.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And you know, that I was discussing that with my wife earlier today, because she cued into something, a show that I was watching in the background, and she was like, whoa. And I was like, yeah, this is the, oh, it was the fact that, almost all the presidents share a common ancestor. And she was like, whoa, is that true? I was like, yeah, you start digging back far enough, they all biologically trace back to one person in England. And that is where a lot of people get the quote globalist agenda concept, and the idea that there is a almost an Illuminati type society that has been running America and putting somebody in charge. It seems like it's a random person, you know, because they're utterly not connected, but you start digging back far enough and yeah, they're all related to this one person. So it's like, you'd love to say it's full on just hearsay and conjecture, but then there's that. And it's like, wow. Yeah, that's wild. You start digging and finding out things like Trump's direct uncle had hands on the documents that came out of Tesla's safe. Trump's direct blood uncle, whose knee he like sat on at family parties, things like that, was there the day that Nikola Tesla's safe was broken open and they took the documents out. That's just wild. That's crazy.
Well, and you know, George Carlin summed it up perfectly about 15 years ago in one of his last comedy specials that went live, when he said the government is one big old good old boys club and you and I aren't in it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hard to not say that when you start seeing things, when you start peeling back, and it doesn't take like shovels full of dirt. It takes like an archaeologist trowel of scraping. Yeah. it's just under the surface. It's not like they buried it hard and deep. To see almost the incestuous way things happen in government, the way that batons are passed from person to person. And even now, to see, like, my brother texted me today while you and I were going back and forth with the articles and stuff like that. My brother texted me about, you know, UFO shot down over Canada. And I was like, yeah, note the term used. It'd be a UAP if they were using modern military nomenclature.
Yeah.
They're using UFO because it's not that. It's full on what they should be saying it is. It is an object that they don't know what it is, but it ain't that.
Well, and that's the problem I had with the early reports when after the Alaska one. It's an object. Was it an object with a balloon attached to it? Was it a balloon? Was it a drone? We're seeing for now, it was an object. Well, I mean, you had to see it either visually or electronically to hit it.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I think, you know, same thing they're saying with this latest one. Then they said that they had shut down airspace over Montana because of a radar anomaly. Then the senator from Montana got on and said, no, it's not a radar anomaly. It was an object. He goes, and they just, you know, were waiting till daylight to actually finish tracking it. And then they came out and said, no, there's no object over Montana. It's a radar anomaly. And then, of course, today they said, well, we shot another one down over Lake Huron. So, I mean, it's, you know, when, you know, which the media has always been friendly to this administration, the most of the media, but when they're even being lied to or they're passing along the lie, that's troubling too. I mean, especially with, once they had to come to admit that these objects are flying into our space, like I said, had a civilian not taken a picture of that first balloon, I don't think we would have ever known. They would have never announced it to the media. They had to.
Well, it's like numerous guests have said, like Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. They aren't going to tell you anything that they aren't going to be disclosing anything that they aren't forced to disclose. or that it's not in their best interest or vested financial interest to disclose. You know, when it comes to UFO UAP disclosure or anything like that, like, yeah, a lot of what you're seeing and hearing is technological leak forward, you know, where it's like, if we leak the technology, then we can at least now admit that the technology exists. And at that point, we can put it into things and make money back from the black budget money that was made to create the technology. But right now, what's going on with this, I'm almost more apt to think that it is part of almost a military psyop by the enemy. You know, Russia's doing crazy things right now, all kinds of stuff. The places that they're coming over from, other than the known Chinese balloon, seem to be
because they're still not releasing any origin.
Yeah,
they're not. You know, matter of fact, the last news report I heard, the Pentagon was saying, well, they'll be real careful not to write these off as other craft that are coming from China because we just don't know yet. So,
lot of people forget the fact that the West Coast of America was bombed by the Japanese. There just was a whole lot that didn't go off. They had high altitude balloons that dropped bombs all across the West Coast of America. They just happened to go so high that the detonators froze. So when they landed, it was just dead weight. It was just a 500-pound bomb of weight hitting the ground. But there's plaques all over the West Coast of America marking places where 500-pound Japanese bombs were found with balloons attached to them. So,
well, and like I told you when we were talking before the show, is, you know, my fear is, I think, you know, that China, I'm sure, has, you know, reconnaissance and surveillance satellites that are, you know, on par with ours. You know, you can, you know, read the date on a penny. So, I mean, if I'm assuming that they have the same satellite technology, they probably can see everything they need to see at those Minuteman missile silos that they need to see via satellite. My fear is that, you know, which we talked about, and I would love to get Mike Turber's take on this, is, you know, are they searching for the best point over the continental United States to have an EMP to knock out the entire grid? You know, because the only way to get the entire grid would have to have the EMP blast, you know, over the interconnections where the east, west, and because there's an east grid, a west grid, and a Texas grid. Yeah. And they all do interconnect, and they interconnect right there, kind of Midwest and Montana. You know, I mean, it's all around that area, and that you probably would want to have a little lower flying, you know, photographic capability and electronics, you know, capability to get that, because otherwise you're going to need three separate blasts to knock out the entire grid nationwide.
Well, and I've actually got the North American power grid up right now on screen. And you can see, like you're saying, there's pretty much a divide almost right down the country. Texas is just about on its own grid. We are an interconnect. It's
pretty much. Yeah.
In our private conversations, that's a lot of what I've been saying, is it seems like something like that. There was the attack recently on the solar array for MGM Resorts in Vegas. There was an attack. I mean, there have been numerous power grid attacks across the United States in the last month and a half.
Yeah, digitally, yeah.
Not even digitally. Like, people go out and attacking substations with, like, firearms and stuff like that. There's been about three or four of them. There was one in Pennsylvania. There was the one I was talking about in Vegas. And it's been interesting. There was the attack at Hoover Dam. Hoover Dam.
And there has been some state actions going against the power stations and stuff too.
Yeah, you know, there's been all kinds of hack attacks, everything else. So to think of it something like that, because that's kind of what I've been saying, is it seems much more like a litmus test or poking the bear to see, like, where's the weak spot? You know, what's the response time?
And just in case your listeners, you know, don't realize this, I mean, most of them probably do. You have a pretty well-educated listenership, but the thing with an EMP that takes the whole grid out, you probably were part of it. You know, recently we had a bad ice storm in Texas. 2 years ago, we had a bad snowstorm that, you know, I mean, I was without power and water for 10 days. And, yeah. You know, if you have a grid blackout, you can't get gas, you can't use an ATM, the trucks aren't going to roll to the grocery store. Well, hell, in Texas, you know, we had a 2 day ice storm. No, you're not pumping water. You know, we had a, you know, an ice storm that, you know, with, you know, 48, you know, 3 days power loss. And, I mean, the grocery store runs out of food and water in the first 48 hours. So, I mean, the Chinese or any other bad actor would have to know that if you shut the grid down with an EMP, it's not down for 3 or 4 days. It's down for 6 months to a year. And they know that they won't have to put troops on the ground. We'll kill each other.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And we've had the discussion before. We had the discussion not only with you, but we've had it with Dr. Robert Duncan. People have this concept that it takes the overwhelming majority for something to either kick off or happen. It does not. It takes the underwhelming minority. Prime example would be the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak. That was a gathering of a few thousand people, like 10,000 people, and they overthrew a dictatorship. That was from a random group on Facebook in the infancy of Facebook. You know, brought to you by NQTEL.
Well, you know, and if you want to go back even further, the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yeah.
You know, that was one guy.
Yep.
One guy that had already been kicked out of Russia, you know, came back, gathered up a following of about 1,000 friends, and next thing you know, it's the Soviet Union.
Black Friday, you know? Man.
Yeah.
1929. One dude walked into a bank in New York and went, you know what, man? I'm just not having a good time of it. I'm not trusting things. I'd like to get all my money. And that's all it took. Somebody yeah. else in the bank heard it, and somebody else heard it, and somebody, and then it spread. And yeah, it doesn't take much to upset the cart or to cause the rot in a barrel of apples, so to speak, you know? And when you're talking about these kind of things, when you're talking about deep state stuff, when you're talking about, nefarious actors in governments and alphabet agencies, things like that. Even the technology that we typically talk about with you and Dr. Duncan, it rings right up there with this stuff. There have been numerous stories that I have posted lately about parents who just flipped like 180 degrees, just randomly one day started hearing voices and ended up killing their children.
Well, that recently happened with, I think that that woman was a nurse.
Yep.
And she did have postpartum depression. She, you know, had been placed on, you know, tricyclic antidepressants, which husband thinks made her worse. Was hospitalized with it, you know, said that she came back immediately after being hospitalized, was released, seemed to be okay, sent him on a trip to the grocery store and strangled her kids.
Yeah.
While he was gone.
Yeah.
And then tried to kill herself by jumping out of the second, you know, story window.
Yeah, cutting her wrists and jumping out of the window. It was even right now I've got goosebumps thinking about it. A horrifying story to think about. And these cases are getting more and more. We're starting to hear more and more about things like this. We're starting to hear more and more about people like the gentleman that we spoke about a year or so ago who just randomly flipped script one day, was a happy-go-lucky off-roading guy. And the next thing, he's in a standoff with police after posting things on social media like, hey, you hear something going on about me. It's not true. It's been interesting over the last year and a half, 2 years to see these cases popping up in the news a whole lot more. And to think of even once again, the idea of it doesn't take an overwhelming majority. It wouldn't look at the recent freeze and what it did in places like New York and New Jersey, where places were looted, you know, it wouldn't take an overwhelming majority to lose power for a few days, to go off rails and to start causing mayhem across the country. It wouldn't take a lot.
And we don't make any of those components here anymore. All of those components are imported. Transformers are imported. And there's a back order on those already just to replace the ones that are going out with routine use.
Yeah.
So, and that's why, you know, all of the experts say that if there's a widespread grid failure due to EMP, that before they would actually be able to replace the transformers and, you know, get new wiring put up. I mean, it's literally a year.
Yeah.
You know, so, and at that point, you know, when the food and water runs out, you know, whoever the bad actor is, whether it's China or somebody else, they don't have to land troops on our coastlines.
Nope.
Your neighbor, your fear is going to be from your neighbors.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not going to be there to steal your money. They're going to be there to steal your water and your food and kill you if they have to get it.
Sadly, it is a situation that I think people should at least be prepared for. My grandfather was probably the first, quote, prepper that I ever knew. And I wouldn't even put him in the quote prepper category. You know, it wasn't anything crazy. He was an avid hunter. So, he had a good stock of shotgun shells, things like that, more to be able to provide food for his family. But yeah, anything happened, he was ready for it. More importantly, it was the fact of he had a cupboard of canned goods and dry goods that you just didn't go in. You didn't touch those Vienna sausages when you were reaching for some. Those were emergency use. He had like numerous 5 gallon jugs of water stored, things like that. So he was ready to be able to supply food for his family for a month at a minimum. And I always found that pretty admirable.
Well, and you know, over the last 20 years or so, you know, especially with, you know, UN recommendations, is that there's fewer and fewer of us living rurally.
Yeah.
You know, and that's by design, you know, as well. Rural people are harder to control. You know, if you can generate your own electricity and you've got a well to get your water from, as a matter of fact, I live rurally. And, you know, there was even in the state of Texas about 10 years ago, they were talking about coming out and putting meters on your well and start charging you for your own water, you know, and people came unglued. You know, I think they haven't done it yet because I think they realize that, well, you know, we're probably going to be taken incoming when we try to come do this to people. You know, I mean, if you've got the water rights and you've paid to drill the well, then you really shouldn't be having to pay the government for your water. You know, so, but, you know, once they control the water and the food and realize that rural people are harder to control, and the whole point of Agenda 21 was to drive the population into urban settings, you know, because it's easier to control people in an urban setting. Yeah. So, I mean, there's fewer and fewer people actually living rurally. And man, if you're living in an apartment complex or in a, and the grocery store runs out of food for a month, I mean, you're definitely in harm's way after that.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And I mean, we saw that at the beginning of COVID, you know, I mean, just hop in the Wayback Machine by not that far, folk. Even right now, whenever things were going crazy over the last week or so here, like you were saying with the ice storm, my wife went to the grocery store the day or so before that, and things were limited to 20 items a person. And even then, like, shelves were bare, you know, even right now, like, you are a happily lucky individual with the flock of ladies you have producing for you. I miss my chickens, because eggs are crazy expensive right now. We have a massive bird flu epidemic going on in the country at farming centers, and it has been driving up the cost of egg production. But even before this freeze and all that, if you went to the dairy section, the egg section was decimated. And the price steady going up. So,
well, which, and when eggs go down or are in shorter supply, then there's a lot of other things that use eggs in the ingredients. If you've noticed,
yep,
there's really very little bread on the bread aisle right now, too. At least not the yeah, selection that you're probably used to seeing.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting to see the chain reaction of things, you know, even the concept of shipping and getting it there and all that kind of stuff. The infrastructure issues, all of probably about 3 years ago, it was the year just before COVID. There was an event that I used to work every year in Boston. And I worked the executive luncheon every year, and that executive luncheon, they had a person from MIT come in, who basically did like fuzzy math, all kinds of stuff. And he gave a presentation on automated trucking in America and the coming of automated trucking, the fact that it will be inevitable, it's going to be happening. And one of the big questions that this was all like CEOs of companies like Cat and all kinds of stuff, like logistics companies. And they're like, well, you know, don't you think people are going to be angry that you're taking all these jobs? And he was like, do you think that they would be spending millions of dollars to develop automated 18 wheelers if there were people who wanted to come drive the 18 wheeler? He's like, that's the problem that we're facing. And we have to find a solution for it. We have to figure out a solution. Because without trucking in America, without the rail system in America, you ain't getting nothing, man. So much is still carried by that. And without the people there to work it, we just had the huge train strike. Like that whole industry almost halted. And that's scary to think about when you're talking about infrastructure, food distribution, things like that. The national
then you compound that with the fact that we no longer produce anything in this country.
Exactly.
You know, you were talking about the things that were hard to get right at the beginning of COVID. Well, you know, in the real world, I'm also a physicist. You know, and it got to the point, so because all of our PPE was coming from China. You know, we don't make surgical gloves and masks and shoe covers and hair covers and all that. So all that stuff was coming from China, most of it. And it got so bad, you know, not a month into COVID, that, I mean, we were being told, well, hang on to your mask. You're going to need to use it for a week.
Yeah, you know, how to clean your mask.
Yeah. And if your gloves aren't too bloody, you know, wash them off, and because you're going to have to reuse them. I mean, we couldn't hardly get PPE, you know, and you would think that it would have, you know, taught the government a lesson. I said, you know, they can afford to produce, if it's a tax break, so be it. But, you know, certain items, you know, need to be produced here, you know, and like there for a while, chicken was in short supply. Part of the problem with that is the chickens were grown here.
Yeah.
They were butchered here, flash frozen, and then sent to China for the rest of the cleaning and the packaging, and then sent back. So, I mean, it's, you know, we've allowed them to foster a dependence on them in this country that should have never happened.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And one of my favorite things that came out of all that was actually the fact that Master P, like the rap star, say what you want, man. He started years ago, like a almost like a Dollar General type company, you know, that like rebrands a lot of stuff, things like that, and puts out cheaper brands and cheaper versions of things. When the pandemic happened, he switched gears and like came out with his own line of toilet paper, his own line of hand sanitizer. Like, he was one of the only people in the country that you could go to and buy all of that. It was like the brilliant.
Didn't he come out with his own line of chips?
Yeah.
Too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Man's got his fingers in everything. It's great. But it is the situation of, yeah, how would we deal with that? You know, I mean, you see how feral people become without the internet for a week. You know, if they're put through that. Without it being voluntary, like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to go to a mountain retreat and not have internet access, something like that. But if you are put through it forcibly, if you're put through a week with no hot water, no availability to water, you're literally stepping 100 years back. You know, like that was the point that I brought up with the big freeze that happened a couple years ago, John, was that, you know, everybody was really, really upset with ERCOT. And don't get me wrong, there were some things to be upset about. However, most of our power in Texas comes from really, really big wind farms out in West Texas. And those things are made to run in like 120 degree heat, not in negative temperatures. The last time that storm happened, we didn't have a power grid. That's how frequently that storm happens.
Yeah. So, well, and you know, the interesting thing is when, you know, like I said, I was without power and water for 10 days. And when the power finally started to try to kind of come back on, I had a buddy of mine, you know, Brian Elder. I mean, you know, Brian.
Yes.
Was living with me at the time. And we sat down and we kind of timed it and we noticed, man, it's like the power comes on at 15 till every hour. So there, and then shuts off on the hour. So each hour there's, and this was for like 3 days. Ooh. You get 15 minutes of electricity every hour. So, you know, and I was about out of gasoline for the generator and I was about out of diesel for the truck. So we ran up to the nearest spur, and sure enough, the pumps were down, and we waited there till 15 till the pumps kicked on. It took them about 5 minutes to actually calibrate and then set where you could use them. And then we had 10 minutes to pump some gas and pump some diesel before it shut down for another 45 minutes. God. So, and it's funny because when we got up there to pump gas, then people saw us there pumping gas and like,
yeah,
does that store have power? Y'all are getting gas. Next thing I know, there was 100 people in line behind us that didn't think about timing out when the power was on. And of course, by the time we were done and they got up there to the pump, of course, it was off again.
Well, and it's hard to, I mean, all you have to do is, once again, we're here in just a few minutes, Super Bowl will be on. All you have to do is watch a major sporting event and the aftermath of it. You know, like what? We're some of the only people I know in the world where when our team wins, we go jack up our own town. We like go overturn cars and light them on fire. Like, yeah, our team won. Like, what are you doing? There is a mob mentality that goes on. Just earlier today, I was on Facebook. I was watching 2001 this morning with my son and recorded the scene. Recorded like 15 seconds of the scene with the apes freaking out around the obelisk. And I was like, yeah, Kubrick got it right. Like, that is pretty much our reaction to everything right there. Like, sums it up in 15 seconds.
Now the one good thing if they float an EMP over and if they're doing all this surveillance right before the Super Bowl, when they know that 90% of America is going to be occupied for the EMP.
Yeah.
The one bright side of that is, you know, a good EMP that shuts down the grid entirely probably will, you know, cut down on some of the targeting.
So. Yeah. It'll be pretty precise. You know, granted, that's worst case scenario. There's 100 other things that could happen. There's 100 other technologies that they could be floating overhead that do all kinds of things. And that is kind of the point here, is that we really do, as a citizenry, need to hold our government accountable. Like you were saying earlier, if it weren't for a citizen with a camera, you know, somebody like me with like high powered binoculars and a telescope going like, hey, what the heck's that thing? Would we have ever heard about it? And much like the UFO UAP conundrum that we are in right now, when wind of things got to the people who are in charge of that money in Congress, they were like, yo, how come we didn't hear about this? And then hearings happened. And now we have an annual report of accountability. And now we actively have a much more open conversation. We have an actual reporting protocol. There has never been an interdepartmental reporting protocol. Number one, it was never encouraged to report anything. You report something, you're lucky you keep your job. you know,
well,
it was a see something, say nothing situation, doctor.
Well, and you and I have been doing this long enough where we have such a healthy mistrust for our own government that, you know, when they were refusing to elaborate on object, and then when they used older terminology and called them UFOs, first thing I texted you is a they're not about to, like, you know, launch the right here before the, you know, before the Super Bowl, you know, but especially with this administration so in bed with China that they would blame it on freaking aliens before they would blame it on China anyway.
Well, and, you know, that has been a big conversation that we've had with a lot of people, especially with the UFO UAP report, things like that, is the idea of everything that was said in that congressional hearing was airspace, danger, airspace, money. Airspace, danger, national security, danger, money. And you know, that's just it. Even now with this, it's one of those, what hearings will come about from this? What agencies will come about because of this? What things will be attached to bills because of this? And that's what you really have to look out for, is not necessarily the incident itself, because the incident itself, like these incidents, pretty small, nothing absolutely crazy. These were not explosive packages. These were not like, hey, yeah, you know, here's biological material. It was nothing like that. Even right now, China has an object near their base.
So they say.
So they say. Yeah, we have one too. You have a lot of them.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about technology like wireless brain monitors, when you're talking about technologies like laser beams literally being seen coming down from satellites from space, that kind of stuff. There's
No, but wait, Chris.
Yeah.
No, I was told 10 years ago by government officials that satellites can't get a laser through the atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah. As I'm not going to say anything about the space lasers.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, and you know, that, and actually that came up at, you know, in 2010, remember Obama had the Bioethics Commission, and I spoke at the Bioethics Commission, and Amy Guttman was the one that was heading all that up. And, you know, there's actually a Facebook group that, you know, the conversation is basically all about that Bioethics Commission, because there was great hope that she was actually looking for the truth. Well, you know, and I think I posted on my Guinea Pigs Facebook page that, you know, Amy Guttman she headed up that as a bioethicist. Then she was basically given the presidency of UPenn. And then she was promoted to a ambassadorship to Germany. And then was actually the president of the Biden-Penn Foundation where they found a bunch of classified documents. So, I mean, for anybody that was, you know, placing any hope in that bioethics commission, once I spoke at it, I realized that this woman was a partisan hack and was really not looking for the truth. Because there were easily 100 people there that got up and gave their testimonies. And at the end of the commission, you know, her finding was that there's no non-consensual experimentation going on in the United States. You know, if you remember, the whole reason for that bioethics commission was because Hillary had to come forward and apologize for experimenting on prisoners in Guatemala with weaponized syphilis and gonorrhea. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, unfortunately in our government, that's kind of the way the game plays. So,
yeah. It's been sad to see things like that come out, but at the same time, great to be able to at least expose the fact that it happens, you know, and when we talk about it all the time, you and I, the fact that there is no law that actively prevents experimentation upon the populace, whether it's a psychological form of experimentation, even right now, if what we're seeing is just a litmus test to see how we react, you know, to see if an extreme slice of America would react to this. There's no law against that. There's nothing to prevent our government from doing such a thing. Period.
And, well, my favorite meme I saw on Facebook regarding the first big balloon was, you know, fly that thing over Texas, and the guy saying, well, you guys need to take turns shooting at us, at it, so we know which one of us hits it.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's strange to see some of the stuff going on with our government right now. It's strange to see things like this happening in the news. And once again, like you said, quite possibly being forcibly put out in the news, the fact that they probably didn't want this story to be out to begin with, any of these, but because the first one came out, the second one came out, and because that one came out, the third one came out. So now the conversation is, what's to be made of balloons? What's to be made of a technology as simple as this being able to basically circumnavigate what should be one of the best air defense grids in the world above Malmstrom Air Force Base? Not once, but twice.
Well, and my favorite was my favorite is when China announced that it was a civilian weather balloon. Yeah. And just so your listeners realize, there's nothing civilian that comes out of China.
Well, and we addressed the weather balloon question with Mike Turber and showed images of weather balloons. Weather balloons are, when they're that close to the ground, very small. Like they're very small up top, very long trailing bottom. That is not what this was. This looked like somebody took an oversized party balloon.
My point is, nothing gets launched out of China as a civilian entity.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the CCP controls everything.
There. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly. And
it's not like here where you can say, oh, okay, well, Northrop Grumman, you know, launched a weather balloon. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
In China.
Or NASA. Or, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and just kind of bang this idea around, because once again, I wonder about the psychological evaluation going on and the litmus test, and even to see how our media reacts and how we react. It is once again such a subtle form of control to do and use things like this to metric a society. And not a lot of people see that. Not a lot of people realize that.
And I was surprised when you called me to interview. I mean, I thought for sure you'd be placing a call. I was looking forward to listening to Mike Turber.
We may yet. We may,
because,
yet.
You know,
I think they're just trying to make you a regular, like a weekly segment.
Because I think Mike Turber was probably riding a shotgun in that F-16 up in Alaska that shot the Sidewinder into that object.
He's been hot on the trail of a lot of stuff with this. And it was one of those, like, I know right now there's a lot that he can't talk about with it. But we are definitely having private conversations and chatting about it as much as he can chat about it. It's always interesting to hear him on the sideline and to see the things that he posts. He put out a couple of videos today about the location of the stuff in Alaska, where things were last seen, all that kind of stuff. So, but I just want to thank you for always coming on, always having such great conversations.
We need to get
together again soon. So
always a joy to be on, Chris.
Well, you take care of yourself. I'm going to go ahead and let you go. Hold the line real quick while we close things out. While you are online checking out all of the amazing books from Dr. John Hall, which are available in our newly designed Curious Realm store. You can go to curiousrealm.com/store. Make sure to follow Curious Realm on all of the forms of social media listed here. We've got Facebook, Gab, MeWe, Minds, all kinds of alternative places like Rumble, everything else. Thank you so much for your continued support. Thank you so much for tuning in every week, folks. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And remember, until next time, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.